Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, this is one that we are finally getting to that I think has been on your list, Hammond, for a long, long time, as one that the one that we wanted to cover on the show.
It has been on my list a long time, but it's also been on the list of a few listeners. After our first season, even, there are people who are recommending this one.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. People with names like Chamond Hamerlin and Chamberlain Hammond. The band we're talking about is Spock's Beard, and this is one that I'd never heard of until I started talking to you. And I think it's funny because I think very early on, you were responsible inadvertently for me getting a copy of a couple cover albums that that were related to band members. Like there were, there weren't necessarily Spock's Beard, but they were Spock's Beard tangent.
Yes. And they also had other people from other bands playing on them.
Right. Right. And I think it was even before you and I started talking. I think, you know, Kevin Gilbert was like the
flash
glue that brought us together to talk about music. But I think this came before that.
Yeah. I think I'd actually sent you information on Cover to Cover Volume 1 and 2 that Neil Morse had been a part of.
Yeah.
And then I remember you played it on Coverville once, some song. I might have been Needle and the Damage Done.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I can't remember that. But then got you the Kevin Gilbert stuff. And then the first time I was on the Coverthon, that very first year I was on, like 2013, I requested the one of their covers from Beware of Darkness. And you played it, and you're like, this is awesome. I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, right. They're Beware of Darkness. We'll talk about that a lot, I think, on the show today.
Yeah. Actually, I want to use it as a talking point because of another cover they did later.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, because I've got things to say about that one, too. all right. Well, Spock's Beard, if you, like me, were part of the uninitiated, they are an American prog rock band formed in Los Angeles in 1992. Can I just say, by the way, like we're going to get one statement in here, I'm already going off the rails, but prog rock, it's basically rock and roll with a Hammond organ. it's all you have to add. Like, you know, like, all right, guitar, drums, bass guitar, lead vocalist with kind of a, you know, a raspy, bluesy voice. We're rock and roll. Oh, you play Hammond organ? All right, we'll be a prog rock band. That's totally fine.
it's a little bit more than that.
Right. The song length, as soon as you add a Hammond organ, it triples the song length.
But it's
because
not just...
you have to add a whole bunch of...
It's not just that. It's time signatures. It's song topics. It's all the things. Keys that you play in. How many keys can you fit in one song? It's
right. I'm going to make sure all 88 keys on this Hammond organ get played in this song.
Song keys, not piano keys.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, like key change.
Yes.
Trucker key change.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, gotcha. Brothers Neil and Alan Morse formed the band with Nick Virgilio. Virgilio?
D. Virgilio.
Nick D. Virgilio.
Yeah, D. Virgilio.
Oh, D. Virgilio. Going to say that 11 different ways, in 11 different keys throughout this whole episode. Nick DiVirgilio and John Ballard, who was replaced early on by Dave Meros. Ryo Okamoto joined soon after the release of the first album.
So you get Ryo's name right, but you don't get Nick's.
Well, there's an apostrophe. It's like a Klingon name. How am I supposed to get that? In particular, the Neil Morse lineup is considered to be at the forefront of modern progressive rock. Neil and Alan had been playing in bands together in LA in the 1980s and initially wanted this new project to be just the two of them. After some discussion, they felt a band would be better and started gathering their members. And the band's name is a reference to the Mirror Mirror episode of Star Trek. So it really is in the evil Spock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why isn't it Spock's goatee? Because it's not really a beard.
Because Spock's goatee doesn't roll off the tongue.
Spock's Van Dyke.
It just sounds dirty.
Now I kind of like that. Like
that's our Spock's Beard tribute band.
Right, Spock's Van Dyke. I just leave off the apostrophe S and just call it Spock Van Dyke. That's fantastic.
And don't think I won't drop in a Muck Time Andrew Allen's cover of it right here.
Oh, it's a good place to put it. Yes. Except that wasn't from Mirror Mirror.
Oh, well, whatever.
That's from a Muck Time.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Sure. In 1995, Spock's Beard released their first album called The Light. The album was recorded independently through 1994. Neil performed the keyboard parts on the album. Rio was hired to play them in live settings. And while playing in San Francisco Prague Fest, they were introduced to Thomas Weber. He is a founding member of the Giant Electric P and Inside Out Records.
Now, Inside Out Records is the current reigning home of all things progressive. If you have any kind of desires to listen to progressive rock or modern progressive metal or anything like that, head on over to Inside Out Records, not sponsoring the show, and take a gander, because if you have any kind of progressive leanings, this is where you'll find your itches to be scratched.
Cool. I believe it. Yeah, I can totally see that. The album had four songs on it when it was initially released. The songs have running times of 15 minutes, 12 minutes, 23 minutes, and 6 minutes. So first, you know, this is my first dipping my toes into non-cover music related Spock's Beard. And even here we do have a, I guess it's the next time where we have a cover. But so you start with The Light, and it does feel like you're watching a musical, like a very, it's got a very theatrical feel to it. The Light I really like, and it's funny because that came up on a couple different albums. And even though I'd heard it on this first album, and I'm talking about the song The Light, not the album The Light, but even though I heard that song on this album, I listened through the whole thing on all the other albums. I really, really like it. And but I wasn't sure if their first album was going to be all this theatric performance, or if that was just going to be basically what I should expect throughout their whole career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I even wrote that in the notes. Is this the way it's going to be?
Well, so I have to tell you a funny story about The Light. The album, when Stacy and I first were married, we went on a road trip to Vegas, and I had a six disc or mini disc changer in my car.
Right.
So we had the one disc in the player, and then we had six discs that were in the changer. And what we'd done is we kind of decided we're going to alternate. So I picked three and she picked three, and then we put one we both liked in the thing and we hit random. Mm-hmm. So we get going and some Toby Keith song comes on for 3 minutes and she's good. And then something else comes on for, I think it was like a Pink Floyd song comes on and we're good. And all of a sudden the water starts.
Okay, and that's the 23-minute song. Yeah,
that's 23 minutes. So we are now past Salt Lake and into Provo. That song continues until we're almost through, the Fillmore Beaver area. And she's like, what are we... This is cheating. This is absolutely cheating. So I was no longer allowed to pick music that trip because I was sticking in songs that were half hour long.
Now, did you have one complete mini disc that was just a bunch of... Spock's Beard music, or did you have a couple? Did you stack the deck?
No, I only did one. I picked a couple other bands to mix in, but they were all cheating. I'll admit that now.
Yeah, I bet I can guess one of the other ones, and I'm going to go and just take a drink right now. Yeah, yeah, but I from the get go, I did enjoy this, and I enjoyed some of it a lot more than others, and I'll talk about that as we go a little further into their catalog, because there is a line, and we kind of already hinted at it in the beginning there, but there was a line for me where they went from being, oh, this is really good, to, all right, yeah good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to their second album. 1996 album called Beware of Darkness. They get that title, of course, right from the George Harrison song that they do a cover of on that very album. The album had more songs, and they were shorter in length in comparison to their first album. They'd also been working with the aforementioned Kevin Gilbert, a producer engineer of note, who was also a musician himself and songwriter with credits including Toy Matinee and work as part of the Tuesday Night Music Club with Sheryl Crow. DeVirgilio recalled he had mixed the first three checks for Beware, and we were scheduled to go to his place and mix another three, and we found out that he passed away. The guys were waiting at the studio wondering why he was late, and I had to drive over there and tell them that he wasn't coming. That was a little dark cloud over the record.
Yeah, this is about the time I discovered Spock Spirit, was during this album. They had an early website up. I remember it was the early web days of, 1996.
96, right. Yeah, so this was many flashing GIFs probably on there.
And, I don't know if they kept it pretty subtle. I'll give them that.
Did they? Okay.
But it was one of those
GeoCities / Spock's beard.
No, I think they had the domain. But what was weird was it was those early days. And so you were skeptical putting credit cards in to buy albums and stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was super dicey back then. It all said it was secure and good, but you had no real idea.
And there was very little streaming.
No, there was no streaming. You're buying it all sight unseen.
I mean, unless you had like a real player kind of thing on your site and people could download that plugin and listen. Oh man, I hated those days.
Or you could wait for half an hour before you could play something on your Winamp.
Right. But I mean, you had to buy the stuff sight unseen. Now you say you found them on the web. What led you to them? Like, was it another band that you liked that said, oh, check out Spock's beard?
Yeah, there was a fanzine of another band that I listened to that said, hey, if you like us, you're going to love these guys.
Like a prog rock?
Yes, it was a prog rock. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm not saying it.
How long are prog rock fanzines? Are they like three times the length of regular rock band fanzines?
I have them all on a shelf and it's my Britannica collection now.
Right.
But no, it was just mentioned in the review section. I'm like, okay, you know what? If these guys are saying they're good, then I'll give it a whirl. So I bought the first two albums on the website and then I was hooked. For the sky. As if they had a choice. Some people only waste so long before they waste away. Some people only waste so long. Man, prog is short for progressive, obviously. What's progressive about 15-minute songs? It doesn't sound like progress to me.
Sounds like Congress, which is the opposite of progress. With Kevin Gilbert gone, that was a lead into a dark thing.
Yep.
To a very first dark opening to this paragraph. The band hooked up with a new engineer, Rich Mouser, who remains with them to this day, for the next Spock's Beard album, which was 1998's Kindness of Strangers. Quote, that was the one where we decided that maybe we should start to cross over a little bit more accessibility for the non-proggers, Miro stated. We still do a lot of Kindness live. It's got that impact where the songs really translate well live.
Yeah, and I'll throw this out too. Rich Mouser is also an incredible musician. He's got a band called Oleander, and he's a great guitar player and incredible musician. So if you're interested in kind of pulling the strings of these guys, like I did to discover Kevin Gilbert or some of these other things, follow the one to Rich because he's done some amazing things too.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Let's see. In 1996, they released the official live bootleg, The Beard Is Out There, obviously a live album, recordings of their concerts for Beware of Darkness. And then in 1998, as mentioned, they released The Kindness of Strangers. This one kind of straddles a line. It's a mix of longer songs and short songs. June is one of their most popular songs that they perform, and it's in a tight race with The Light as their signature song.
Yeah, this is the album that I use typically to introduce Spock's beard to friends and or family.
I could see that. I like this album a lot. And I totally know what you mean about The Light and June. Like those good representations. For me, The Light is their absolute representation of, hey, you want to know what Spock's beard is in 15 minutes? Boom. Let's listen to The Light.
And if you want to know what Spock's beard is in 6 minutes, listen to June.
Right. There you go, the condensed version.
Friday, I get my leg back on again. I'll get to stay.
In Nick played drums on Genesis's album Calling All Stations.
Okay, and I'll throw this out there. We could do an entire episode on Nick, and we could do an entire episode on Neil for that matter. So
yeah,
the fact that we've condensed Spock's to what it is for this episode is kind of a feat for us, because we could do this, we could do part one, part two, part three on these guys.
I believe it. You gave me a very specific and a very good playlist to follow for this. And it was just a tip of the iceberg to the amount of music that I believe you have in relation to all of these artists that are connected, that have tendrils out from Spock's beard. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed what I listened to. The album Live in Europe was released in 1998. Also in 98, From the Vault was released through their website. It contained covers, B-sides, and unreleased songs, as well as some alternate mixes. Also contained a live version of Jimi Hendrix's Fire, mashed into Waste Away.
Which is really interesting, because the Fire is a very upbeat song and Waste Away is not.
Yeah, right. It does. I did notice that. And I was looking at the beginning of this going, all right, it's Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire. And then it switches gears completely.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, new song? Nope. Fire / Waste Away.
Yep.
But that's fine. Hey, you know, it's totally fine. In 1999, they released Day for Night. There were three versions of the album released, a U.S. version, a U.K. version, and a Japanese version that all contained various extra tracks.
Yeah, imagine how hard it was to be a completist in 1999.
Oh, I don't have to imagine. I've got, let me tell you, what album do I think I've got the most different versions of?
Probably a Squeeze album.
I'm sure it's a Squeeze album. It's probably... I think they've released a few different versions of East Side Story.
Okay.
So it's probably that. But yeah, so I can relate.
Yeah,
I can totally relate.
It's when you have, again, Internet 1.0, and you're trying to sort out which version of that disc you're looking at on a website, mm-hmm. it's really hard to know. And I think I ended up buying like six versions before I got the three that I needed. And I use needed like an addict, but you know
right,
what I mean.
Of course, yeah. That's funny. Let's see. The Healing Colors of Sound is a multi-part epic that covers tracks 8 through 14 and runs over 20 minutes. So it's like this is one that they could have done as one long song, but kind of broke it up into individual tracks.
Which makes it acceptable for the changer on road trips.
Right? Yeah. But is it one that... Is it like the last half of Abbey Road, where if you're listening to a Beatles, or if you're listening to Beatles on shuffle, and all of a sudden you come into the middle of Carry That Weight, it feels like it interrupts something. Or Pauline Pam is another good example.
Occasionally,
like it just jumps into.
Occasionally, yeah. It does, but mm-hmm. usually they have some sort of rhythm break or tempo break or key change or something that kind of builds into it. So
sure,
it's not. I don't know if it's as abrupt on this one as it could have been on some other ones. So
gotcha. Yeah. When I rip albums that have those on it, I totally rip there's a way in iTunes you can rip several songs together so mm-hmm. that it forms one track.
Yeah.
During the ripping process.
This album really, really felt as if it had a lot more money behind it, because its production felt much higher than the previous ones. They were mm-hmm. actually trying to get some sort of commercial push. It's the truth, it's a lie, love will never die. Don't you see, it's like trying to climb out of your skin. You're like a butterfly fighting the wind. Don't you see, it's like trying to... The song Skin was released on a CD single. Okay, somewhere I heard, I don't know, it was one of the making ofs, one of the videos they turn out, something. They were making jokes about how this is one of the most simple songs they'd ever done. It's in 4/4 time. There's like no key changes. It's pretty straight ahead, straightforward.
And it's 4 minutes long.
Yeah. And so it stands out against the horizon of Spock's Spirit songs as one that's like, look, that's a straight ahead rock song.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. In 1999, they released Live at the Whiskey and Near Fest.
Neil also released his first solo album this year, called Neil Morse. It's really, really good. It's got a lot of really pop, strong pop sensibilities to it. I think Neil's mm-hmm. a pop writer at heart. He just happens to also like a lot of proggy things. So if you get an opportunity to listen to his first solo album, I actually threw a song on it on my picks. But okay. it's a fun, really good album. It does contain a lyric that drives me bonkers, and I think I'll cover that later, but we'll talk about it.
Oh, really? Ooh, yeah. I can't wait to hear that. Very interesting. In 1999, the Skin single contained Skin, edited versions of The Healing Colors of Sound, Can't Get It Wrong, and a track from the aforementioned Neil solo album. Is that the one, or you'd mentioned that it was called Neil Morse.
Yeah.
Lost Cause is the track from
that
album.
Lost Cause was on the album, yeah.
I gotcha, okay. In 2000, they released the album V, or 5. They just wanted to be first in the V catalog, in the V album folder.
Maybe they're all lizard people, and that's a subtle hint.
Wow, that would make sense. And what a great reference. The album produced a single and a video for All on a Sunday.
Which is a great song. I love All on a Sunday. It's again, super poppy because I feel like they are all pop writers at heart. And it's a fun little song. Also in 2000, saw the release of the first Transatlantic album. It featured members of Marillion, members of Spock's Beard, members of the Flower Kings, and the drummers from some other band I can't remember.
Wow. So like a mega supergroup. Yeah. How many people total were in?
It was four guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so member, you listed four bands and said members.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, eight people. No, it's one guy from each of those four bands.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I was visualizing,
Mushroom Head on stage.
A tour bus that was, right, yes, exactly. In 2000, they released Don't Try This at Home and Don't Try This at Home Either. And later in the year, another live album called There and Here was released.
Yeah, all good albums. And what's interesting is Spock's Beard can play like two different types of concerts. They can put all their shorter songs together and play for 3 hours, or they can put their long songs together and play for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Are both of those live albums, or all three of those are live albums?
They are, yeah.
Don't Try This at Home and Don't Try This at Home Either? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. It's just interesting how they can have different personalities of live shows based on where they're playing. If they're playing more of a pop venue or a pop crowd, they can put a bunch of short songs together. If they're playing, you know, Proc Fest, then you're going to get two songs that last 3 hours.
Right. How many do they have to bring in a second Hammond organ in case the first one gets tired?
There's a lot of keyboards on stage, but no capes, which is probably why I like them.
You have keyboards and capes. 2001, they released All on a Sunday. The promo track is different than the album track, and the single also contained an unreleased song called The Truth.
Yeah. Also, 2001 saw the release of the second Transatlantic album, and arguably my favorite.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Same four guys?
Yeah, same four guys. They'd released four albums, and arguably the second one's my favorite.
Well, why do they call it Transatlantic? Are they from different...
Yeah, two are from England and two are from the U.S.
Well, that totally makes sense then. That's a very appropriate name for them then. Mm-hmm. Good. 2002, they released the album Snow. It is a two-disc concept album that tells a story.
Oh yeah, it does tell a story. I'm sorry, I forgot to put that in the notes. It tells a story very similar to all the other rock operas and progressive or the concept albums, where the guy is a musician and he gets famous, and then fame sucks, and then things change. Mm-hmm. It's a similar theme.
Yeah, I've seen that a bunch of times. I really like this, and this one actually has a third album that's like, it talks about that, demos, acoustic tracks, cover versions, alternative takes of some of the songs on there. But I really, really like this album. And enjoyed it a lot. Neil left the band after this album, and Nick took over as the band's frontman. They brought in Jimmy Keegan to play drums. Neil had recently converted to Christianity and wanted to explore those beliefs without imposing them on his fellow band members.
And
very interesting.
He's taken that the Spock's Beard songwriting sensibilities and moved into Christian rock. Mm-hmm. So we have these epic Christian rock albums now
it isn't just a matter of, I mean, it's not just that he's in that religion, but the music he's creating is Christian rock.
Yes. Oh yeah. Without question. He's done albums called, Testimony. And I mean, he's all out with his belief systems and his own solo projects.
It's going to sound like I'm making fun, but is it Christian prog or
yes.
is it
oh,
Christian
yeah.
rock?
It is Christian okay. prog. It is the same.
I guess you said it's like 15-minute epic. So
yeah, no, it is the Spock's Beard songwriting sensibilities translated into Christian topics.
Gotcha. Okay. The album Snow explores similar ground as albums like we mentioned, like Tommy and The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. And there was a third disc, as I mentioned, that was part of the limited release that contained demos, acoustic tracks, and covers. This was, like I said, I really like this album, and this for me was kind of the last of the albums that I really, really enjoyed from them.
With barely the strength to stand, and tears in his eyes, he's a stranger in a strange land.
After this album, while I appreciate the technical prowess and the talent, for whatever reason, it just seemed like they lost that spark that Neil must have brought to the band.
Well, and it's interesting. They definitely changed writing styles. It was more of a group approach after this. It's a different feel. I mean, Nick is a different songwriter. Alan's a different type of songwriter. Dave started getting songwriting credits. So, I mean, it changed for sure. I love the Neil era. I actually enjoy the Nick era a lot myself. So it's good that we balanced it out because your stuff seems very Neil heavy and I went the other direction because that's what's on Spotify.
Right. Yes, you're gonna find some of our playlists, one of our playlists very well represented on Spotify and the other one, not so much. But the even vocal styles for two brothers, you'd think that their vocal styles would be a lot more.
No, Nick is not his brother. Alan is his brother who plays guitar.
Oh, Alan. That's right. Right. Okay. So never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick's vocals are very, very different from Neil's. And I hate to use the term generic, but his vocals, it's for me, it was like when, David Lee Roth left Van Halen, it was a very, it's like they lost that spark that made them new, unique. And even though Sammy Hagar's got a recognizable voice, it just sounded like more Sammy Hagar music. It didn't sound like Van Halen. And for me, that's what kind of happened with Spock's Beard.
So with me, I think I looked at it as an evolution like Genesis, because the pattern's pretty much the same.
That's another good, that's a great comparison. Sure.
And so I saw it as Spock's Beard 2.0 with a different singer who had a stronger, almost pop sensibility, because that's what happened to Genesis once Peter Gabriel left. They stopped being as proggy and arty.
They went way poppy.
And went more poppy. So I kind of saw this as a path I'd already walked as a fan of Genesis. And so I kind of maybe rolled with it differently.
Sure. I could totally see that. Yeah. In 2003, they released the album Feel Euphoria. Without a principal songwriter, they adopted more collaborative writing style and enlisted the help of John Bogehold and Stan
Bagehold.
Bayhold.
Bayhold? Bagehold.
Bagehold. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll say this whole line again. Without a principal songwriter, they adopted more collaborative writing style and enlisted the help of John Bagehold and Stan Osmus to help in the process.
I've interviewed John. He's a great interview.
Oh, good. Did you mess up his name?
No, I had him say it first so that I knew how to say it.
Bagehold. Both John and Stan have had writing credits on all of the subsequent albums. You see, now that I've brought up that I've messed up his name, now you have to leave that part in. So, so totally leave that part in. And this too. Wow, how the sausage is made in Soundography. The result was a departure from their previous albums with a move to a more modern sound. This was met with mixed responses from fans.
As with us, it was mixed. You totally felt one was. Way and I felt another. So
it couldn't get more mixed than with when two hosts of a show feel differently about mm-hmm. it. So that's absolutely the definition of mixed. Dave Mirros had his first writing credit in the band's history with this album, with the song The Ghosts of Autumn.
And I really like this song. It was close to making my list, but I'll be honest, I felt like it was a hit, and so I didn't do it.
Sure. I had to scroll down really quick to see if I picked it because I don't remember it standing out. Yeah, actually, it was very, very little that I picked after the Neil era. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that when we get to our playlists. In 2005, they released Octane. The first seven tracks of the album form a complete work, A Flash Before My Eyes, that tells the story of a man involved in a car accident who relives his memories in the moments after the crash.
Yeah. I'll also throw into, as a side note to this album, that Neil released a demo version of a musical he'd written in the 80s called The Hitman at this point. Mm-hmm. It was released through his website, and it's a really good, catchy musical, and there's a song on there called Hitman, and it's about these two guys who are competing with each other to create a band that doesn't exist that's going to top the charts.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of, yeah, it's really good. It's a fun album to listen to. My kids love it. I wish I had the wherewithal to hire people and put it up somewhere because I think it'd be really fun to do.
Yeah, no kidding. That's cool. It's such a thing too. Like you can tell that with these albums and how theatric they are and how they tell these stories and the concept albums, you wonder if there's ever any point that they're going to be able to turn it into an actual musical, like an actual acted, performed musical.
I actually thought about that for my cover stuff at the end, and I'll tell you about how my evolution went.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Well, look at that tease.
Yeah.
There was a special edition of Octane that was released with extra tracks, as well as a video documenting the making of the album. And the album itself received generally good reviews when it was released. The same year, they saw the release of Gluttons for Punishment. Is that a live album?
Yeah, it's a live album. It's okay. Like a 2 or 3 disc live album. It's
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Cool.
Yes, and then the next it has year, 3 songs on it.
3 songs?
Yeah, 1 per disc.
Oh. How did I? I just fell right into that, too. I just like completely walked right into that trap. The next year, they released a self-titled album called Spock's Beard. That's why it's self-titled. The album met with mixed reactions from fans.
Okay, this is an album that actually ranks really high for me. I had a hard time not picking a lot of songs from this one. There are songs like Skeletons at the Feast, Sometimes They Stay, All That's Left, all could have made my list, and I would not have had any problems with it.
And they've also got an epic on here, as far as the mind can see, in 4 parts. It's about a 17-minute mm-hmm. Set of tracks.
Yep.
That's interesting. Very cool. In 2008, they released a live album called Live. I'm going to guess that's a live album.
Yeah, they went super basic in 2006, 2007, 2008.
Yeah, no kidding. A self-titled album and then a live album called Live. It's almost like they said, I don't have the effort to come up with another clever live album name.
Actually, they actually mentioned that in their, on the Wikipedia page, they talked about how when they were coming up with the Spock's Beard, the self-titled, they were like, oh, we could come up with something clever like 9, like no in German or, you know, something that referenced the letter, not the number 9, but they just decided to call it, you know, Spock's Beard because they didn't want to be, you know, cheeky.
Right. Well, and by skipping 9, they went right to 10 in 2010, an album just titled X, but 10 makes sense. Production costs were covered by pre-order. So they kind of did a sort of a Kickstarter thing before there was a Kickstarter.
Yep. Yep. And again, it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm going to give these guys $50. And I'm hoping that an album comes out of it. It was a really weird time. I mean, this was new. I'm doing this in 2009.
Right. Right. But worked out perfectly. Mm-hmm. And a good example of how that thing worked to the point where, you know, now we have several websites, Pledge mm-hmm. Music and GoFundMe and, of course, Kickstarter. The album was released in a limited edition to those who supported the album with pledges, and then a regular edition that was released later in the year. And those who pledged high enough had their names listed in liner notes and sung in the lyrics of "Their Names Escape Me." Did you pledge high enough?
No, I didn't. Oh, that was a significant amount of money. But
Johan Eriksson, Barry Knight, Tony Mann, Crane Coles, Dana McAdams, Bill Baxendale, Costas Acriotis, Barton Miller, Barbara Shue, Caroline Cockrell, Joseph Shook, Peter Boros, Colton O'Connor.
I love that song. And later on a live album, they released a version of it without the name. So it's just this long instrumental break.
Right.
And I have to admit, I missed the names.
I have to go back and listen to that now. That sounds hilarious. Yeah. There's it right there. The names escape me. Okay, cool. Very cool. They had played Sweden's Rock Festival and High Voltage Festival, and during both shows, Ted Leonard had filled in for Nick on vocals, who had been unable to perform. In 2011, Nick left the band, and Ted took on lead vocals.
And Ted used to be the singer of a band called Enchant that I had been a fan of back in the early 90s. And when I heard he was coming in, I got super excited because I really liked Ted's voice a lot.
Sure.
And Nick had gone off to join Cirque du Soleil, and he was he was a musical director for Cirque du Soleil for a number of years.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if, some of the shows that Tina and I loved were because of Nick. It's probable.
Yeah.
Sure. The High Voltage show also featured an appearance from Neil, who performed The Light and June with the band, of course, their signature tunes.
Yep.
Nick had been playing with other bands and other projects, and as you mentioned, including Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, he plays with Big Big Train. He's all over the place. Nick did a version, a whole cover version of Lamb Lies Down on Broadway called The Lamb Rewired or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
Which is great.
Okay.
And then he played Shaming of the True Live.
Wow.
He put that up, and it was recorded, but all the master tapes were somehow destroyed, so it never got released.
Mm.
So, I mean, he's everywhere. He's crazy with how much he works and what he does.
That's cool. Good. Well, good that he continued on and stuff that was good after leaving Spock's Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, again, kind of helps with those tendrils get out there that, all right, you like this band. When this performer leaves that band, now there's a whole nother band you can like, and it just kind of grows from there. In 2011, they released Live at High Voltage, and the X Tour Live was released the following year in 2012. In 2013, they released Brief Nocturnes and Dreamless Sleep. Once again, they used the crowdfunding model to help fund the album's release. They provide a special edition release for the people that supported the project that not only included a couple extra songs, no, an entire extra disc.
Mm-hmm. And it's got some of the best songs on the album on that second disc.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you gotta be a backer to get that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I really appreciate the fact that they buried a lot of the gems from those sessions on the second disc.
Hmm. How's the how does it compare to just the standard release? Like the
they're all good, but for whatever reason, the songs on the second disc really hit me. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy that second disc.
Is this the one with Minion? No, the next album is the one with Minion.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Neil was credited as a writer on two of the songs, and he played guitar on the song Waiting for Me. They recorded and released a concert from their fan cruise called Live at Sea in 2014.
Yep.
So were they part of a fan cruise or like?
No, they do this thing called Cruise to the Edge. And they get a bunch of prog bands together and a bunch of prog fans on a boat, and they do concerts like all the time.
Oh, that's cool.
And they do, you know, have a really cool guest appearances from people, and it's cool. I would like to do it, except I don't like cruises.
Makes sense.
I don't need I don't need the progressive version of Norwalk virus that lasts twice as long. Geez.
Right. Yeah. In your ears, all you can hear is Hammond organ.
Yep.
In 2015, they released the Oblivion Particle. John Bagehold emerged as a writing force on this album, with five of the tracks listed and credited to him. And the special edition featured a cover of Iron Man, Black Sabbath's Iron Man.
Okay, so a couple of these songs on this album have a really strong Styx vibe to them that I didn't catch until I was listening to it for this recording, for the show.
And it's funny, completely separately, I felt like it had a Pink Floyd vibe. Like some of these songs, especially Bennett Built a Time Machine, which I really like. Could have been a David Gilmour song.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about Iron Man now, or do you want to wait?
Let's wait and talk about it when we get to playlists.
Okay.
In 2015, they released a 3-disc set called The First 20 Years. It contained Falling for Forever, a new song that featured every member of the band that had ever appeared on a prior album. That's a great project. That's a great idea.
And it's over 20 minutes long.
Well, you have to have enough time for everybody to make a make an appearance. I mean, you know, to bring up the Van Halen thing, that'd be like Gary Cherone, Sammy Hagar, and David Lee Roth all singing together on a Van Halen song.
With Wolfgang and
everybody's
got to be there.
Michael Anthony and no kidding.
And big pile of cocaine.
Well, sure. November 2017, they're going to be releasing a Snow live album.
Actually, I got it. I got the digital download of it yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So Snow live is a thing now.
That's cool. Is it the full 2 discs? Like, do they perform the entirety of it?
Yep,
oh, that's
do.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. I like that. So I'm gonna have to check that out. In 2017, Jimmy left the band and Nick returned to play drums on this upcoming album that they're working on.
Yep.
It's good stuff. It picked up for me in the end. Oblivion Particle, I really enjoyed. I didn't put Minion on my playlist, but I easily could have. Or Bennett Built a Time Machine, I really liked as well. So, got a kick out of it.
Good. All right. So for some general stuff. So four of the first albums they did are featured in Progressive Report's top 50 progressive albums from 1990 to 2015. The Light and Snow are also in the top 10. So you've got six of their albums in the top 50 prog albums of all time.
That's amazing. Because, I mean, you have to consider there's got to be a bunch of Yes albums in there, a bunch of Rush albums in there. I don't know, who else am I forgetting? Like King Crimson, maybe?
Well, I don't know if they were releasing in 1990 through 2015, but like Transatlantic.
Oh, right. So it's releases. I'm sorry, I didn't see the dates on there. So it's okay. It's just in that 25 year.
Yeah. So like Flower Kings probably have an album or two in there. Porcupine Tree has an album or two in there. I mean, there's a lot of good prog music that's out there. And the way that they're able to have six of the albums in the top 10 is a big deal.
Right.
So, I'm sorry. Okay, two in the top 10, six total over the 50 albums. So.
That's still incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible feat.
So, their styles are kind of influenced by, you know, early Yes, early Genesis. Gentle Giant is an overweighing influence over all of them. They're known for multi-part harmonies and counterpoints. There's a few a cappella pieces that are mixed throughout the albums that are very cool, counterpointy. Let everyone in the band have a moment to actually sing, and those are kind of cool. In the world, all that is shall be. In the world, what it shall be. In the world, how can it be not what it is when being is in itself that which is destined to be, because it is what it is, all that it shall be. In the world. what it shall be in the world. They have chronicled their history so well. They have 7 DVDs that they've released since 1998.
Like making of and
yes. You know,
band history and stuff. That's amazing.
Making ofs, lives. They have covered, they are obsessive documenters.
Hmm. Cool.
And then also Nick, Neil, Alan, and Rio have released solo albums. And Ted, like I said, sang for Enchant.
Yeah, lots of connections, and you know, I mentioned it before, but the collection of stuff you have for this band is just incredible, absolutely incredible. All right, so you're seeing them in concert. You've how many times have you seen them in concert? Actually, I'm curious.
Not in person at all. It's all been.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they never
all been DVDs.
They never travel anywhere close enough for me to get to them.
Interesting. That surprises me. It surprised me that they don't tour anywhere close by because I can't imagine. If they were to do Red Rocks, I feel like you'd.
Oh yeah, I'd make it. Yeah, I'd make it. I'd make a trip to within reason almost anywhere. But sometimes the reason is financial. So,
of course, yeah. All right, so let's say you get the chance, Hammond. You get to see them live in concert. What is the one song that you expect that they would absolutely play? And it's funny because I would have said The Light. That's, you know, the fact that you include that in the list here is what I would have said. Yes. But it's not the one that you pick.
No, so I think it's The Light. It's either June, The Doorway, or On the Edge. And I'm really leaning toward June because every live album we have, it's on there. It was released as a second. It was released as a bonus track on Day for Night. I feel like it's got to be June. And if it's not, I'm going to eat my hat.
Hammond, don't you can put down that fork. June is the number one song most played in concert by Spock's Beard, followed by Go the Way You Go. It wasn't even on your list.
Oh, wow.
Then The Doorway and then The Light. Then something called Ryo's Solo.
Yeah. Just solo, a solo. Big keyboard solo. Like drum solo was Neil Rush's most played song.
In the Mouth of Madness, On a Perfect Day, Waiting for Me, Day for Night, and Harm's Way, rounding up the top 10. And without, you know, any surprise, Beware of Darkness is their most played cover in concert.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So what kind of things would
second
you...
second most played cover, by the way, is Squonk by Genesis.
Yes. They actually released that on an, where was Squonk? Squonk was on a bonus track on somewhere.
Oh, was it? Okay. So on one of those,
yeah,
probably like on From the Vault or something.
Yeah. I can't remember where I know it's on there. Oh. I have it. So I don't know where it comes from though.
Sure. Of course. Cool.
So what would you like to hear them cover?
Yeah, I love this new segment that we're doing here as part of the show. So we give the band copious amounts of money and we ask them to cover one song. Mine came from that connection I had with the David Gilmour sound on Oblivion Particle. I would love to hear them do Comfortably Numb, and I would be fine with them turning it into a 12 to 14 minute epic. I think it would be really, really cool. But I demand that they bring Neil Morse back to sing it.
That makes sense.
He'd have to be the vocalist. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I went a different direction. I went to the song View to a Kill by Duran Duran.
Wow.
And the reason I did it is because they love their starts and stops. They love to have a stop and then have a guitar squeal and then a funny noise and then they go back into it. And I feel like they do
a lot of that on Day for Night.
Mm-hmm. And I really feel like they do a good job Spock's beardifying A View to a Kill.
That's an interesting one because that would be taking it completely out of their wheelhouse. Whereas, you know, them covering Pink Floyd feels like, all right, that would be kind of a safe one for them, but I'm still sticking with mine.
And they do have some strong pop sensibilities throughout. But here's the thing is I actually did my first typing when I first came up with this. I actually had them covering Stephen Sondheim's musical, Assassins. They'd only have to bring in like one female vocalist and they could cover the entirety of that album very easily. And there's enough interest in the music, and there's enough difference in the way every song is presented that they could do some really interesting things. But I changed it because I really think that Vito Kill would be far more interesting and a bigger challenge.
Oh, it would be a massive change. I'd love to hear. Honestly, I'd love to hear either one of those.
Yeah,
that's cool. All right, let's get to our Spotify, or I'm sorry, our playlists. And as we mentioned before, because a lot of my songs come from the Neil era, you won't find it on Spotify, sadly, but I'm still going to include it. You're still going to hear snippets of it here as part of our playlist. So you will get that. The first one is that title track, the cover that they do of George Harrison's Beware of Darkness. I'm a huge fan of covers. Obviously, I'm a very big fan of George Harrison as well. So this just has got to be no surprise. And I think I probably plugged this in before I even listened to their first album. I just I just knew, because I've played Beware of Darkness on Coverville as well. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as we had the notes up, I'm like, well, I'm obviously going to do Beware of Darkness.
Okay, so let's talk about Iron Man for a minute.
Yes.
In comparison to this.
Yeah.
Tell me where you are.
I'm disappointed, Hammond. I am disappointed.
I am. I was want for more.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they do it. They play Iron Man so close to the original that it's one of those times you got to ask yourself, well, what was the point of doing this cover if you're not going to put your own spin on it?
Yep.
They do everything right from the get-go with the whole burn. Iron Man. Like you guys have an opportunity to really prog it up and mix it up and really slather it with your own prog sensibilities. Mm-hmm. And just so bummed that they didn't.
I know. They could have covered it in beard hair and they didn't.
Yeah. Right. Gross. But yes, you're absolutely right. The next one, and it's funny, when we were talking about this earlier, I forgot that I included it on my list. June is on here. What's funny is June is on here and the light isn't, but whatever. Hey, I like June a lot.
So what I will have done, just so everyone listening and they can understand the process, I have stuck a snippet of the light up at the top where we talked about Stairway to Heaven songs. Good. That way you get to have your snippet of June.
This would so be a greatest hit.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is the greatest hit.
Yes, and my notes on it, just I like the vibe of this one a lot. It's a very cool, positive song, and you feel like the sun is coming out while you're hearing this song.
Yes,
Mommy Comes Back, which is from the Day for Night album. Right from these weird, bizarre opening guitar noises from this track, I loved it, and I did like the whole Day for Night album. There was some listening issues that I had with it, but even with those listening issues, the whole album still really connected with me. So I really, really liked it.
Yeah, Day for Night's a good album. It's funny, when I listened to the very first opening pieces of Day for Night, it always reminds me of the opening pieces of Somewhere in Time from Iron Maiden. That da 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 da.
Sure.
It reminds me a lot of the Iron Maiden bit, but it's in a different key. It's different timing. It's all different, but there's a similarity to it that I'm like, oh, there's the Iron Maiden comparison.
Right.
Yeah. That's another band I could hear them cover. Let's hear them cover some Run to the Hills.
Oh, I'd like that. I'd like that a lot. Fourth one on my list is Open Wide the Floodgates. This is from the album Snow. I like the whole album, so I knew I was going to pick something from Snow. Open Wide the Floodgates. Again, just a really cool, positive vibe. Maybe that was what I needed from these guys, is just like trying to think of the Yes song that begins, I can feel no hands.
No,
I can't remember what's right. Whatever song that is by Yes.
It's from 90125. I know that.
It is. And that's what these songs reminded me of, just that major key arena rockers with
Leave It.
Just a really Leave It. That's right. Just such a great vibe to them.
Yeah.
And then finally, I did pick something from the post Neil era. So you got one song on Spotify from that self-titled Spock Spirit album. The song is called All That's Left. Photographs and and I did dig that one as well.
And I will dig through any live albums that are post
there you go,
and
yeah,
see if any of these things pop up. So
sure,
not all hope is lost, but they won't be the studio that show up on Spotify.
Right, makes sense. All right, give me your playlist, Hammond. Right. Did you manage to stay in five songs for this one? I can't believe you would be able to make five songs for this one.
I did for Spock's, but I threw one in just because it was a good talking point.
Cool.
My first one is Distance to the Sun from Day for Night. I feel like this should be in a musical. It's always hit me on a really emotional level. Like I talked about earlier, I don't get a lot of goosebumps when I listen to music. But if I'm going to point to one song that comes really, really close, it's this one.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
It's a great song. I feel like it belongs in like Godspell. It just fits. It's a great, great song.
Sure.
The next one I actually referenced, you actually mentioned it earlier, As Far as the Mind Can See. And I picked Part 3, They Know We Know.
Right, yeah, this is that that four-part.
Yeah, they know, we know. That one?
Right, yes.
The chorus is awesome. The entire suite's good, but whenever this comes on, I really, really like it. Cool. So if you're going to pick a suite to pick apart, then that's the one you go to.
That's a sweet, sweet.
Yeah.
Couldn't help it.
You kind of broke me there for a second.
Apparently.
The next one I picked is The Bottom Line from Feel Euphoria. This feels like such a personal story about a relationship that died and the feelings that are associated with it. And it hits on a lot of levels for me, but I just love the way this song feels because it just feels so raw about what they're trying to say about this relationship. It was heated. I got burned. And please don't act like nothing even happened. Listen and learn. We've invested too much time. This is yours as much as mine. And the next one is Jaws of Heaven from 10 or X. And I love this song. And they talk about the burnt moving faster than a prairie fire in the lyrics. And for whatever reason, that's very visual to me. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of prairie fire, so I don't know where it's coming from. But
imagine they move fast.
Yeah, it's a good song though. I love this song from the minute it came, since I heard it on 10. It was one of those ones where you're, you know how you listen to a first album, you're not sure where it sits with you?
Yes, for sure.
This one sat with me just fine, right squarely in my brain from the minute I heard it.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of albums. I mean, we've talked about that on the show many times that's happened with us. So
yeah,
that's a great example of it.
Then my number five is The Planets Hum. Life at ease. You try to keep the streets filling all the cracks. The way they piece together the bass line and how it starts and stops and builds and how they use the keyboard and how they build the lyrics into the way the music is structured is really cool. And it creates a level of interest that I think the song might not have had if they hadn't made it musically interesting. And then okay. my bonus track is Nowhere Fast from Neil Morris's self-titled album. And it's a goofy, goofy song from a very upbeat stalker's point of view.
An upbeat stalker.
Yes. It is.
So he's digging through your trash, but he's whistling while he does
it. Yes, he's a super stalker, but he's super upbeat and really clueless about it. And it's a really fun song. The album contains one of the saddest story songs I've ever heard. And then there's one where he uses a turn of phrase. He uses it incorrectly, and it drives me bonkers every time I hear it.
Oh, what is it? What is it? Because I love this kind of stuff.
Okay, so... That which doesn't kill you only makes you stronger is the phrase, right?
Right, yeah.
In the lyric, he says, that which doesn't kill me only makes you stronger.
What doesn't kill me makes you stronger.
Yes. It's truly annoying when I hear it.
Well, he's taking poetic license.
He's taking poetic wrongness is what he's doing.
Yeah, he is totally. Yeah, I don't know what to make of that, but yeah, you're right. Poetic wrongness. That's funny. Cool. And I've got to go back and listen to that one because that was not on the list that you told me.
No, it wasn't. I didn't want to overwhelm you like I did with Mushroom Head. I wanted to keep this one very single focused.
I appreciate that because you did give me 170 songs, 17 hours of music to listen to. So 18 hours of music to listen to.
And with an average song length of like 8 minutes.
Right. Exactly. I think that's what I came up with. Fantastic. Oh, that was a blast. Spock Spirit, everybody. And go check him out. Go listen to stuff like our playlists and their greatest hits. I mean, that first 20 years is a good resource to pick up some stuff. And that's probably what I'm going to link to on Amazon the three-disc set there. Next week, we have a sponsored show. Big thanks to Peter, who is a Soundography super patron. You can be a super patron too. You could totally do that. Just go to patreon.com/soundography and become a super patron. What you do is you get to be our executive producer for an episode and make us listen to somebody. We will protest. We will fight and drag our heels and kick and scream, but we'll end up doing it. And what we're going to be doing for him is listening to David Wilcox, the American folk musician. Don't listen to the Canadian folk musician named David Wilcox, because there is one, but listen to the American folk musician named David Wilcox. And big thanks to Peter Imig for being our sponsor for this. He also sponsored the Deer Hunter episode. So he's got a good track record with me.
Yep. Hopefully.
Yeah. That is going to be our next episode. Until then, we invite you to reach out and contact us. Oh, please do. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are @thesoundography. If you want to follow us there, let us know what you think of the show. Everything else right there at soundography.com. You'll find all of our episodes ready for your listening pleasure. You can check out our playlists right from the show notes of every episode, as well as find links to buy the songs on Amazon. Help support the show by becoming a Patreon. Even if you're not going to be our super patron, just be a Patreon supporter and throw us a buck or two every month. Every little bit helps. And if everybody listening to me right now were to give us a buck or two, then we could, I don't know what we could do.
We could pay some of these bands to do these covers we talk about.
We could throw some money at Spock Spear to record View to a Kill. Oh my God, how amazing would that be? You can also leave us reviews. Leave them there over at iTunes or at Podchaser is a new thing. Check out Podchaser. I'm going to go ahead and make sure I get our Soundography domain on Podchaser. But yeah, it's another one of those places that you can go and review episodes. Of course, you can let us know what you thought on Twitter. A lot of you do that and via email. And we thank you for all of your communication, your feedback, and your support of the show.
Yeah, we on Twitter, actually, we had a request from the country of Canada by way of Mike O'Day just recently. So
we did. But until Canada starts putting all their toonies and loonies together and becoming a super patron, we're not going to do it. So sorry, you're going to have to quit buying your Timbits and your poutine and maybe throw a little money our way, eh? And I've just completely offended the entire state, the entire country of Canada now. As I mentioned before, next week's episode, David Wilcox. Until then, on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.